Canada. Wife's been gone 13 years now. We used to travel around quite a lot when she was living. We had no children. But we've been gone for 13 years, and I've been alone here ever since. And I made windows for my car on each side in the front there. I go and park side of the road somewhere and put them screens in, sleep there overnight. Used to like that. But you know, you wouldn't dare do that now.
Why is that?
Because there would be two or three or four young people come along there, and they'd see that somebody camped there for the night, and they'd want to have some fun. They'd go in there and start picking on you, and first thing you know, you'd either be dead or your car would be smashed up or taken away from you or something.
Were people different back?
They were friendly then. I could park side the road and they're perfectly safe anywhere. But now they'd have to have some fun with you. Before they got through with you, they'd maybe take your car away from you, or ruin it, or kill you, or something. You can't trust them now.
What did you? I don't know anything about those old Model Ts. What are they like?
Well, you had to crank them for one thing, you know. The old Model T Ford. Yeah. That reminds me of they were small, and they had this canvas tops, you know, that you could put up when you wanted to. If you thought there was going to storm, well, you could stop and get them out and put them up there. That's the only way you could keep out of the rain. But used to be only just a few, four or five cars around Sanford. The old hotel keeper over here, his name was Charlie Murphy. He was a kind of a serious-minded old fellow at the hotel. But he had a car, one of them old Model Ts. And Doc Blakely came to Sanford, and he lived there at the hotel with him for a while, but he didn't have no car. So they went out up towards Edenville one time, and it was the winter time, and there was a little snow. They didn't plow the roads out them days, you know. They'd drive over them what they could and break it, but they got stuck somewhere up there. A little snow. Stood there and wheels turning around in the snow, couldn't get nowhere at all. Old Charlie says, "Well, Doc," says, "what are we going to do now?" Well, Doc says, "Let's pray." He liked to have a little fun. Says, "Let's pray." Lord Charlie says, "Pray hell, that wouldn't do us any good." But all they had to do then was go to, any farmer had horses then, you know, and just go and get a horse and pull them out of there. But old Charlie was serious minded. He couldn't see no fun in joking. Are you too hot here?
That's fine.
I got a fan right there to start up if you want it.
No, I'm fine. Were those cars, were they a pretty good car?
Those what?
Were those Model Ts a pretty good car?
Well, it was called good at that time, of course, because there was nothing else much. But, of course, they wasn't fast or nothing like that. One time I used to live in Saginaw. I lived down there for 33 years, a long time ago. And I was into a barbershop there one day, and there was two or three others in there. And there was one of them that I knew, a man that worked for the Michigan Central Railroad. He worked up in one of these signal towers there for him. I knew him well. And so we're sitting around there waiting our turn in the barbershop, and some of them was talking, speeding and one thing or another. Finally, he spoke up. He says, "Now, it was shortly after they built the new road, a 3 or 4 lane road from Saginaw on the east side of the river. Shortly after that." And he says, "Now, I never had any hand to speed, nothing like that. I always had time to go wherever I wanted to, and I never had to drive fast. I never was a speeder at all. Only once. Just once. And I had to step on it." He says, "I went over that, I forget whether that was a 3 or 4 lane road, but anyway, went over that road to Bay City, and I got a late start coming back to Saginaw, and I had to go to work a certain time. So that's the time that I had to really step on it." He says, "At times I had that old car going right up as high as 39 miles an hour." So that was speeding at that time. There goes a plane over.
Yeah. What were some of the other cars around at that time?
I can't think of many of them. Of course, there was the Buick and the Chevy and Pontiacs and several others. Can't think of many of their names now. I forget names more than anything else. Somebody will, I meet somebody today and maybe I saw them before and knew them before and couldn't recognize them. Tell me what their name is, who they are, and maybe tomorrow I've forgotten it. That's the way I am. Forget. I've owned 4 or 5 different cars. Because I've driven all over the country, go to Florida, California, stayed there all winter. I hoboed it home from California, from Los Angeles. I was living with my folks right out here, a quarter of a mile. Yet at that time, I was single. I'd been out in North Dakota for the harvest, thrashing. And from there, in the fall, after thrashing was over, I went out over the Northern Pacific Railroad, clear over to Seattle. And then from there, I went on down to Portland and San Francisco. I'm going to get around there and try to get a job, you know, in places, and I couldn't get no work. There was no manufacturing out there at that time. And, course, in the wintertime, couldn't get much work of any kind. So, right after New Year, I had one penny. I just had one penny in my pocket. And all the other stuff I had, I lost my suitcase. I had change of underclothes and razor and stuff like that. I lost that, so all I had to my name was the summer clothes I had on. And one penny. So I lived off of the saloons out there in Los Angeles. There was one street there that had several of them down there, and they had them free lunches out there, a little lunch in them. If you bought a drink, you was entitled to a little bite, you know. But I didn't. Sometimes, if I get into a place where somebody was buying drinks for the house, why, I'd get in on that, and then I'd be entitled to a little handout. But otherwise, I'd go in there and stand around a while, and then maybe I'd step over there and I'd take just a little bit, because I didn't want them to get mad at me and drive me out. Take just a little bit of stuff. Then I'd go down to the next one and do the same thing there. And you know, I weighed more when I left there. I've done that for 2 weeks. And I slept out anywhere I could find a place to sleep. And I weighed more than I'd ever weighed before in my life, just living like that. And then right after New Year, I thought to myself, I might just as well be on my way home, because I ain't going to get no job. So I slept in a manger one night in front of a team of horses. I'd pull the hay over me, and they'd stand there and eat the hay off me, and then I'd get cold and wake up and go and get some more hay. And I got out of there in the morning and went down the depot, Santa Fe Depot, and they had a little fireplace going in there. I sat down there in front of that and toddled along till the police came in there. And he drove me out of there. Said, "You can't hang around in here." So I went right across the railroad track and waited for the first train to come, passenger train. When that came, I went over and, you know, under the Pullman car, there's 1-inch iron comes down from each end this way. And then there's a brace goes up under the car that way, about 8 feet apart, two of them. Sometimes there's only one rod along the outside. Sometimes there's two there. Sometimes there's two here and two right over there. But this one just happened to have one single rod along there. Well, I got under there, and I laid right down on and crossed my heels over that rod that way, and I hung on to this brace up here. And that's the way I rode from Los Angeles, 9 miles over to Pasadena. Just rode that way. Well, when I got over there, I got off, and then after that, sometimes I'd find some short boards to put on there. I slept under one going across the Mojave Desert all the way from, I got on there at Barstow. Happened to be somebody else had been on there, and they had some little short pieces of boards laying across them lodges under there. About that big square, each way. And I got in there on that and rode clear over to Williams, Arizona. Right on that thing, right across the desert, and I fell asleep on there, curled up. Just curled up there, and it's dusty. Curled up under there and had my coat pulled over my face that way to keep the dust off my face a little. And when they stopped over, they stopped at the Phoenix, not Phoenix, another little place a little ways into California from the other side of the Colorado River there. I can't remember, but I woke up there. I slept, but after the train stopped, and then I heard people was talking and walking around there, and there was always just rough brick in front of the depots. They make a lot of noise. I woke up. There I'd been sleeping for quite a long while, right on them, curled up on them. Why, if they'd have just worked a little one way or the other, or I'd have rolled over or something, I'd have been just ground up. Just like mincemeat. But I rode the rods quite a lot that way.
Did you come all the way back to Michigan on the rods?
No. It was quite warm until I got down to into Arizona. Not Arizona, but Kansas. And I got down in there, it began to get colder, you see. And I had to get inside somewhere. But I rode the cowcatcher one time, too. From Williams to Flagstaff is only a short distance, 6-8 miles, with the cowcatcher.
How'd you get on the cowcatcher without them seeing you?
Oh, they might have saw me. I don't know. The one place out there, well, that was when I was riding. I was on the other side of Barstow yet, Arizona, a ways, and I'd been riding down in the icebox. There's no ice in it, but I got on there, down in that icebox at San Bernardino, California. And I threw down an old tin pail I saw and a block of wood down in there so I could get out, get on top of them to clear out when I wanted to, you see. There's a whole train. It was just them refrigerator cars, but there's no ice in it. When he was coming, just before he came into, well, the little town, just 8 or 10 miles before he got to Barstow, just pulling out of that little town, and brakeman come walking right over the top, and he knew I was in there, and he hollered down in there to me, come out of that, here's a good place to get on, to get off of this and get on to another one. Well, I says, what's the matter with this one? This one, all right. Well, he says, you rode this long enough. So I kept monkeying around with it. It says, now, it's going too fast now. No, I climbed down the side ladder, and he started walking over ahead, and I climbed right back up again. And he saw me, and he came back there, and he says, I thought I'd throw you to get off with us. Well, I says, it seems to me I heard you say something like that. But I says, it's going too fast now. Well, he says, it wasn't when I told you to get off. Well, I says, it is now. And this suits me all right. What's the use of me getting off from this and getting right on to another one? And, you know, we were both standing up on top of that car. And he didn't undertake to put me off either, because if he'd have tangled with me, we might have both fell off of there. Could never tell. Yeah. And I was pretty wiry at that time, too. I used to be just about the champion wrestler and boxer around this country. Anywhere within my weight. Not to brag, but it's true. And if he'd have tangled in me to put me off, he might have got off too. So I went on over to Barstow, and then I got off, and then there I had the big something to eat. Then I got on the rods under there, and on the way from there over to this little town where I went to sleep there, where I woke up. That's where I rode, from Barstow clear over to that little town. I can't just remember that. But I got home here and but I used to have to get into a boxcar someplace like that when I got the farther I got this way, it was colder. Had to keep warm. In one boxcar one time, it was coming down from down through Indiana at that time. And I stood right up and slept in that car. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. I stood right up and my back against the wall in the corner. Stood right there and slept. Like a horse. Sleep standing up. Well, I had a great experience that time. But it'd be pretty tough now, at my age.
How old are you, Mr. Reed?
How old do you think?
I really wouldn't know. I'd say you look to be about 70.
Yeah, I'm 70. 18 more on top of it.
88?
Yeah. I was 88 last February 6th. Yeah.
don't look any older than my dad. He's maybe that hard life has got something to say for it. Huh?
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of maybe just luckier and I've taken good care of myself or something. And so I was 88 last February 6th. And when I'm downtown around here anywhere and people I know, well, how are you feeling? And if I've got a place where I can, you know, on the floor like this, that's the way I feel.
Well, that's a pretty good jig you just did there, huh? Well, I don't think I could do that.
Well, that's the way I feel. But I, around here when I nothing else to do, of course, I don't work nowhere. I've been retired for a long time. It's ever since I was 65. That is. But I've done a lot of work since that, too. But I walk. I get out and walk down the road that way and this way and around every day for the weather so I can. I'll average mile and a quarter, mile and a half every day, you know, just for pastime. Well, I haven't got anything. If I had something good to drink, I'd give you a drink. But I don't drink anything stronger than coffee. Or
I don't drink either.
Don't you? Good, good. No, I quit drinking a long time ago. One time, well, it was when I was out in. The time that I hoboed home from California, when he was out in south or north of San Francisco, about 30 miles, Sonoma, I believe is the name of the place now. There was a guy with me at that time, but afterwards we broke up. He was too light-fingered. I was afraid he'd get us into trouble. He wanted to steal everything he could. So finally we broke up. That's why I was alone when I was coming home. But out there, we had a little job out there for a couple of weeks. We boarded at a hotel, and this hotel keeper and his wife was divorcing. And when we went there to board, why, you want to know, we had to register it on. When we registered Saginaw, Michigan. Why, he found that out, and he says, why, well, I used to work in Saginaw myself. And he liked to take us up to his room in the evening and take up a few bottles of beer and some cigars. I drank a little beer and maybe a little bit of liquor sometimes and smoked cigars. And he liked to do that, visit with us, because we was from back here where he used to work, for the Saginaw Boom Company. Well, after it comes Saturday night, and the next day, Sunday, we were coming back down to Los Angeles, San Francisco. So we were through there. And come Saturday night, we went in, after supper, went into the bar room. There was a couple of the waitresses, and I and this guy, and we just got a drink in there, and as I say, I never drank much liquor, for I didn't like it at all, but I'd put a little syrup with it and make it go down a little better. After a while, I began to feel I was getting drunk. So I got out of there. I didn't hang around there anymore. I walked on down, it's already dark. I walked down the sidewalk about a couple of hundred feet, and I saw a little bunch of green brush over there about 100 feet off the sidewalk, and I went over there and laid down in them, and I was sick, vomited. And then after that, I went to sleep there. When I went back to the hotel, it was after midnight, and I couldn't get in. The place was locked up because they were divorcing. So I knew my way around. I'd been there long enough to know my way around. I could walk right up. In the front, there's a balcony up on top there. I could walk right up or climb right up the corner post, over the railing, and there's just one door from that, and that went right through the landlord's bedroom. And I went right through there, sneaked right through there, and he was laying there in bed. And then I went out into the hallway, and around the hallway down there, into my own room, stayed overnight. Now, he showed us that he kept what he called a shot sack, a good-sized sack of money right in his bed with him. His wife didn't know anything about it. He kept that right in the bed all the time. He never let anybody into that room to even make the bed or anything like that. Now, I thought after that, I said to myself, well, no, that was a crazy thing to do. Even though that if he knew it was me, if he woke up and knew it was me and had a gun, didn't know it was me, or maybe even if he did, he might have thought I was going to go and take that money with him, kill him maybe, or I could even knife him in his sleep if he was asleep, or me knowing that money was there, I could have went in there with something and knifed him. Killed him. I could have done something like that, and I thought after that, my God, I took an awful chance. And I quit drinking right there. That's enough. If I'm going to do such things as that, I'm drinking, I'm through with it. And I quit it.
I guess the lumberjacks around here used to drink quite a lot, though, didn't they?